It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The White House asked Congress yesterday to pass a law that would allow year-round sales of gasoline that is blended with 15% ethanol. Legislation allowing year-round sales of E15 narrowly passed the House last month. The proposal is now being considered by the Senate.
Members of Wisconsin's congressional delegation on both sides of the aisle have come out in support of permanent year-round sales, including Republican Representative Derek Van Orden and Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin. Supporters say it would lower the price at the pump and help Wisconsin farmers.
A lower 10% ethanol blend is sold all year, but the E15 blend, also known as unleaded 88, is usually banned from sale from June to September due to pollution concerns. But the Environmental Protection Agency, under the second Trump administration, has issued a waiver allowing it to be sold through the summer.
President Trump spoke about the change during a rally in Chippewa Falls earlier this month.
We eliminated all unnecessary restrictions on sales of E15, and I've made it clear that we're going to go E15 all year round, and I think it's something that you want, right? Do you like that? Are you happy with that?
Corn and biofuel advocates argue that the fuel burns cleaner than other fuel types and that year-round E15 could serve as a lifeline for corn farmers in Wisconsin and beyond.
But critics like Clean Wisconsin say year-round E15 would lead to increased land contamination through the use of nitrate fertilizers to grow the corn. They also argue it would worsen ozone pollution in the summer and could lead to higher rates of asthma and respiratory infections.
For a closer look at this issue, we have Jeff Hadachek, an assistant professor and extension specialist in agriculture and applied economics at UW-Madison. Jeff, welcome back to Wisconsin Today.
Yeah, thanks, Kate.
And Scott Irwin is a professor and agricultural economist at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and a biofuel policy researcher. Scott, welcome.
Glad to be here.
Scott, starting with you, the Wisconsin Corn Growers Association and other groups, they have promoted E15 as a benefit for farmers and for people at the pump. What impact would permanent year-round sale of E15 fuel have on farmers who grow corn for ethanol production?
Well, the big benefit for farmers is expanding demand. Gasoline in the United States currently has almost every gallon 10% ethanol by volume in it. And if we went to 15% ethanol, which is what E15 represents, that would be a 50% increase in the demand for corn used to make ethanol. So that's the potential that's out there for farmers. It's a lot more complicated whether that would end up saving money for drivers.
Can you put that demand increase in perspective? How big of an increase is that?
50% would be jumping probably at least 2 to 2.5 billion bushels of increased corn demand. So that would be, a significant chunk of what the United States produces in corn. You know, our crop is someplace around 16 billion bushels. So you can divide the two and get a pretty good idea that it would be very significant.
Jeff, Wisconsin being a major corn growing state, the state agriculture department says much of our state's corn is used for ethanol production for fuel. Would year-round sales alter the amount of corn in production here? Would farmers here grow more of it?
Yeah, likely. And as Scott pointed out, the raising of corn prices means that corn becomes more favorable from a market perspective relative to other crops. And even it may mean that, you know, previously uncultivated land may come into production.
And Wisconsin lawmakers have said drivers at the pump would pay less with this change for year-round E15. What impact could this year-round change have on fuel prices? Is there any way to know that, Scott?
Well, it is an area of significant debate, and there's strong views. So I want to state that up front. And my perspective is that there's potential for E15 to save drivers money, particularly with some of the incentives available through the Renewable Fuel Standard program. But on the other side, even if this RVP waiver is passed, there are some significant hurdles to increasing the adoption of E15 across the country. And those hurdles, other hurdles, involve costs. And so it's debatable whether in the end it would save drivers a lot of money once we absorbed all those costs. So that's the point of debate.
Where are these costs coming from? Would it be from, you know, the farm itself? Would it be costs for inputs? Would it be at refineries?
Well, it probably wouldn't be at the farm level because we have the ability to produce the additional corn, I believe, without much increase in the cost of or price of corn and inputs. It would probably raise the price of corn some, but that's not the really significant issue. If we take a look at the fuel supply chain, all the way from divided into three parts, the upstream refining level, mm-hmm. the midstream logistical and pipeline level, and at the downstream retail gasoline station level, there are significant costs to the transition to E15 at each of those points in the supply chain.
Jeff, advocates for E15 biofuel, they have argued that this fuel reduces harmful emissions, but we hear from environmental groups like Clean Wisconsin who've come out against allowing E15 fuel to be used year-round. What are some of these environmental concerns around going to E15 biofuel year-round?
It's a good question, and it's somewhat of a double-edged sword, because as you mentioned, you know, there are direct environmental potential benefits from the reduced reliance on fossil fuels, right? So if we're making more of our fuels that we drive in our vehicles from corn ethanol, and that's less fossil fuels that we are extracting and emitting into the atmosphere. The other side, though, is that some of these indirect channels, as you maybe mentioned that Clean Wisconsin has come out with, is that if we're cultivating more corn acres in Wisconsin and in the U.S. generally, that means that we are also increasing the inputs that are required for corn grain. Corn is typically more input intensive, particularly for nitrogen fertilizers, than other crops like soybeans or maybe wheat is. And so we're adding more nitrogen into the environment, which particularly for our here locally in Wisconsin in the Central Sands, you know, we have very high nitrate levels in domestic private wells, which impose costs on those rural households who are exposed to those higher levels, and also potential risks. We are also, if that nitrogen is not absorbed by the crop, we're you know, susceptible to runoff that ends up in our surface water bodies and ends up eventually in the Gulf, creating hypoxic zones. So, you know, there are environmental considerations, downsides as well with it. And, you know, on the other side of this too, cultivating more land also emits carbon itself into the atmosphere. And so even though we may be reducing a carbon footprint from the pure fuel perspective, we also have to consider the land impacts of just purely just cultivating more land. And I think that is somewhat of an issue of debate as well, as are the actual environmental benefits from that reduced carbon footprint in fuel actually offsetting the cost, whether it be for nitrogen, for additional water use, for the greenhouse gas emissions that are emitted from agricultural production directly.
And with this additional cultivation, one thing you didn't mention, but I want to bring up, are there risks with monocropping, with farmers not rotating their crops as often, perhaps, and just planting corn? Is that an issue?
Sure, and it all contributes to the that same kind of issue. So if we are monocropping for corn, one of the things that is beneficial in a crop rotation is that the soybeans themselves, being legumes, will produce nitrogen and leave nitrogen in the soil, meaning that there is some residual nitrogen left over for the corn the following year. If we're purely monocropping corn, for example, that means that we're putting in we're having to put in additional synthetic nitrogen to that soil, which is then going to be either left on the surface and maybe susceptible to runoff. All that being said, though, you know, farmers can take a number of practices and probably have better idea today than they did 20 years ago when the renewable fuel standard was first implemented, on practices that can prevent these things from happening in the first place. And we also have additional incentives from a market perspective to help incentivize sustainable practices, conservation practices that keep nitrogen in the soil, that absorb residual nitrogen. It's a double-edged sword. It's a complex issue, as Scott mentioned. There are certainly downsides, but I think there are ways as well that we can incentivize optimal management of it.
We're talking about what legalizing the year-round sale of E15 biofuel could mean for Wisconsin farmers. We have Scott Irwin there, professor and agricultural economist at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. And Jeff Hatichek is with us as well, an assistant professor and extension specialist in agriculture and applied economics at UW-Madison. Scott, I understand a major point of contention with getting enough support for national E15 legislation is around exemptions for small refineries. Why is this such a critical aspect and an attention point on this issue?
Well, it's definitely contentious. It has to do with when the U.S. renewable fuel standards, or mandates, as they're commonly called, were set up, there was a provision where small refineries could be exempted out of the program. Mm-hmm. That sounds so simple. But under the first Trump administration, that was the small refinery exemption, or SRE program, was basically used as a backdoor mechanism for cutting the size of the mandates. And so that's the important context. And so, you know, that has become a very contentious issue between the crude oil refining sector and the agricultural biofuels sector, that action. And so the E15 bill that was passed by the House ties the passage of the RVP waiver to allow year-round sales of E15 across the United States with some changes in the SRE program. Some of them helpful to agricultural and biofuels interests, some of them not helpful. And it's the not helpful part that I think has been surprising to people and has caused within agriculture a real debate about whether on net is this overall good for corn and soybean farmers in the Midwest.
And then too, you know, lawmakers on Capitol Hill have to figure out how they fall on the issue. And I'm wondering, do you see an appetite in Congress for this ethanol policy change and this give and take around small refineries and blending laws?
Well, it did pass the U.S. House. Mm-hmm. It appears, from what I've been able to gather, that it's got a rough future getting passed in the U.S. Senate. I think that the likelihood is probably pretty low at this point that it's going to pass in the Senate because of the nature a few senators, particularly with those with have strong refining interest in their states, have more power to block it than they did in the House.
Jeff, I understand that this a key piece of this conversation, as we've been talking about, our country's renewable fuel standards, how they impact demand for crops like corn, and we've talked a bit about soybeans. How have these standards impacted our agricultural sector?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think we can look retrospectively at the renewable fuel standard that was passed almost 20 years ago as a case study about for what we might expect, expanding that to be. So some research, not done by me, but done by some colleagues and folks that I know, said over the course of, 10 years after the renewable fuel standard, it raised corn prices by 30%. That led then to 9% more cultivated area and about 9% more corn acres on average. That was directly from this increased demand that we kind of started talking about in this conversation. And that meant that we had about 5% on average more nitrogen fertilizers applied as a result of the renewable fuel standard. And then all of those things then led to some of those environmental externalities, increased environmental externalities that I kind of discussed, whether that's nitrogen in our groundwater, in our surface water, GHG emissions from cultivation and land in general. Now, like I mentioned, though, maybe it's we wouldn't expect necessarily the same impacts to happen today because we have alternative incentives for limiting those impacts. It's maybe even questionable on the margin how much corn prices would change today relative to what they changed from the initial passage of the renewable fuel standard. So a ton of caveats there, but those are some we can look retrospectively about what some of those impacts have been for relying on some of our fuel supply from corn ethanol.
Amid these caveats, Scott, what are you watching for, whether it's on Capitol Hill or in farm communities as this E15 is being debated?
Well, it has a lot of headline value in the farm country. It's gathered a lot of support, and it's become somewhat of an emotional issue within farm country, particularly as we're looking at squeeze margins and relatively low grain prices. And so this is viewed as, one way out of that squeeze is to increase demand through corn ethanol. So I'm just watching to see how the legislative tea leaves work their way out. Again, my expectation is probably at least this round going to be disappointed that it doesn't get passed.
Well, Scott and Jeff, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Scott Irwin is a professor and agricultural economist at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. And Jeff Hatacek is an assistant professor and extension specialist in agriculture and applied economics at UW-Madison. We've been looking at perspectives on year-round E15 production and the potential impact of expanding the sale for both corn growers and consumers in Wisconsin if the legislation is passed by Congress.